Welcome to Let's Talk About Tests Baby, a weekly podcast about software testing, QA processes, agile, and other general geekery. My name's Jem Hill, and I'll be your host. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of Let's Talk About Tests Baby, acceptance criteria, and you. So my notes for this episode has the phrase, the best thing ever, next to it, which says a lot about me, I think, especially as that is a serious note. They pretty much are the best thing ever. And so this episode is going to be dedicated to acceptance criteria. What, where, why, when, how, etc. So let's get to it. The humble acceptance criteria. As I mentioned in the last episode, as part of the agile process and sprint planning process, I write or help to write acceptance criteria. If you need to remind yourself of anything about the sprint planning process in agile and scrum, you can pause here and go back to the first one and revise. I can wait. We all good? Good, let's begin. So at the start of the project, there's requirements capture, and then these get broken down into user stories. We define those further in acceptance criteria. Acceptance criteria define the boundaries of the user story, and so they take into account how the functionality will work and what different user roles will see. So you take into account user roles, who can access it, whether they need to be logged in or logged out, whether it's something that an administrator can do, or whether it's something that a visitor, that will affect visitors to the site, or both. And different scenarios where that functionality could be used, or how the functionality works in response to different scenarios. So you break it down per user and per scenario. It's a checklist of sorts, essentially. The lead dev or a member of the QA team will then write out the acceptance criteria. And we personally use a BHAT Gherkin language formula for acceptance criteria. So given X, when I do Y, then I should see Z, for example. Which is nice because it means that it can be, I think I mentioned this the last episode, it can be used for testing and it can be used for regression tests as well in BHAT. So it covers a couple of different functions. So yeah, so the acceptance criteria provides boundaries and specifics for the user story. And I do it in non-technical terms. This is so that everyone's on the same page. It's very much using the same terminology. There's no confusion there about what it means. It's very much that everyone from the dev to the user and everyone in between can understand it. So like QA, PM, anyone else involved in the project can understand what that is. So the lead dev approves them to say that yes, it's technically feasible and yes, it will do what the user wants it to do. I, as the QA, will agree to make sure that it does cover every scenario that I can think of. The scenarios are tight enough that there's no edge cases or no cases that will leak through that will miss that could need further work later on down the line. When we both agree, I mean, sometimes there's some back and forth and some changes are made. The acceptance criteria then goes to the client and the client have to approve it. This means that the awkward questions happen right at the start. It happens before any work has been done. So it reduces the rework. It's more likely that when clients have not been quite clear in their wording or if there's been some misunderstandings, when they read what we've written as exactly what we envision the functionality to do, they're more likely to turn around and go, well, actually, I actually wanted to do something completely different. It does require buy-in from the client to actually read it and not just blindly go, yeah, that sounds fine. But usually after the first few rounds, the first few sprints of this process, the client does have a lot more buy-in. They are more interested in what goes into the acceptance criteria and things like that. So it's much easier to fix. You have to think about the work before you do it. You actually have to sit down and go, right, okay, so how's the best way of achieving this? So you're having to really come up with the best solution that you can. It forces that little bit of space for thinking about the best solutions that you can get and the best way of meeting those client requirements. So after the approval process has been completed, that's when work starts. Ideally, no changes are made to the acceptance criteria once work has started. But if there are changes, either the client goes, actually, we've just realised that this piece of functionality is missing, or if the devs realise that it's far more complex than they thought, or if they've found another way of doing it that means acceptance criteria needs changing but provide more functionality or better functionality, then we have to go through the approval process again. The acceptance criteria changes and we go through the entire thing again. I said ideally that wouldn't happen, which is why we try and get approval from three different team members, so product owner, lead dev, QA, and while we also try to write it in very simple, non-technical language so that everyone can understand exactly what's going. There's very little ambiguity in what the functionality will do and what it won't do as well, which is just as important as what it will do. One of the big things I'll do if a dev's written the acceptance criteria, is it'll come to me and it will say what it will do. And I'll go, well, if these aren't met, what happens then? If the person's not logged in, will they see an access denied page, or will they see a login page, or if it's a page that they can access but they can't see a part of it, what will they see? Things like that. So I'll often go back and go, right, I'm going to add these scenarios in of what happens when this thing doesn't, when given A doesn't happen, just so we've got everything covered, so we know exactly what happens throughout the different scenarios. That example is perfect in how devs and QA think differently. Devs want to go for the best, easiest, cleanest route from A to B. Their thing is they've got this problem and they're going to fix this problem in a way that is nice, meets all the code standards and everything like that, and is, you know, it's a nice solution. It's a perfect solution. Whereas I've got to look for ways to break it. So we're coming at it from two different angles almost. And so then the acceptance criteria means that we meet in the middle, right at the start of the project, and force these questions early. So work started, changes are made if needed, but hopefully not, which means I have to go through the approval process again. It means that when the work is done, a test case is already made out. We already know exactly the steps that we need to do to test it to make sure the functionality works. If work meets acceptance criteria, in theory, it's ready to go. Discretion and judgment is used, especially as with things like design and the way features interact visually with other features. That's very rarely spec'd out in acceptance criteria. It generally works on functionality. So it doesn't work on the way things interact visually, it just covers the functionality. So if something works perfectly as you expect it to, but there's something just off on the visuals, if it doesn't respond quite right, if it's a responsive design or site, or just if it doesn't look quite right in one browser, for example, things like that, you've got to use discretion there. The basics are, if it meets acceptance criteria, then in theory it should pass, and that work should be ready to go to UAT. So it means the client knows how to test it, which encourages better UAT. The client knows exactly what they should be looking for, so they're more connected with the work, and it reduces the amount of questions of clients coming back going, well, actually, I'm not sure how to use this bit of the site, can you explain? Whereas if the steps to use the functionality are laid out on the ticket in front of them, they know what they're doing. There's that buy-in there going, well, if I know how to do these steps, I can test it. So acceptance criteria. I love acceptance criteria, as you may have gathered. I think it solves a lot of problems. I think it pushes a lot of solutions as well. And it's not just about problem solving. I think it encourages better work. I think getting functionality down early means that, and knowing exactly what the client wants and making sure the client realises what they want in that sort of detail, means that as a team, the developers have, and the project managers and even the QA team and everyone else has a much better idea of what the client actually wants, which means that they can give better suggestions, they can tailor suggestions properly. Instead of saying, oh, well, there's a module that does kind of what I think you want it to do, they can say, well, actually, there is this module, but there's also this module and this bit of functionality that will do these additional things that you may find useful if you want this functionality, or if you want it to work like this, we'll actually have to do something else. And that happens before the first bit of code for that work has been put down. Instead of it coming back in UAT, which means that the space you've got to then rework and fix it is shorter, because that's the nature of sprints. And it encourages better buying from the client. I said they have to engage more because they're testing the work and because we're asking them these questions, and if they don't feedback, they don't get, you know, we have to chase them for the work. And they have to think about their needs as well a lot more, get it a lot more granular. In fact, I have a couple of clients who actually, in response to bringing this process in, have started writing their own acceptance criteria just so they can think about how they want it to work themselves. I've had emails saying, do you want me to actually, I'll still write the user stories as you expect, but if you want me to write out acceptance criteria as well, because I'm doing it anyway to think about how I want it to work, I'll just put it on the ticket. And I've gone, yeah, that's great. And it's been good for the most part. Like, again, they've been thinking about how they want it to work, not how they want it not to work. So often what I'll do is I'll take their acceptance criteria, I'll fix up the formatting because the Gherkin given when then format is not something that everyone knows, surprisingly. So I'll fix the format a little bit and I will add the way that they want it to not work, and then that's it, that's done. I pass that straight on to the dev. More often than not, the dev will approve it and that's it, we're ready to go. And yeah, any changes go to go back to the client, but I haven't changed what they've written. I've just added bits in and made it in the correct format, and that's it. They've already written it, they've approved it, we're ready to go. It works really well. And yeah, it's great. I love it. And it also makes onboarding new staff a lot easier, whether that's onboarding new staff into a company or just onto a new project. Like, I have sat down to projects that I've never worked on before. When I first started working at my current job, I sat down to projects that I never looked at before. But the acceptance criteria had already been defined. So yeah, I may not have been familiar with how the site worked, but it had steps in front of me. So I only had to learn the basics, really. And then, I don't know if you can hear the ice cream van. I apologise for the ice cream van that's going past the back of my house. Professional podcast. I had a set of steps in front of me, which meant that I only had to find out the basics of the site. How do I log in? How to get to the admin area, etc., etc. Which a lot of CMSs you can, a lot of sites you can kind of guess anyway. And then I knew vaguely where I needed to head, what area I needed to look in, and then I could teach myself. Because once you know basically how a website works, you can kind of go with most of those steps. Not all of them, obviously some features are really complex and the acceptance criteria gets a bit ridiculous. And then, yeah, you have to get more input, but it's just, and just following that format, they know exactly the new staff or on new projects, you know exactly the format you need to follow. And everything's defined really rigidly. And because it's so rigidly, the process of explaining it is relatively simple. I've basically done it here in 10 minutes, maybe. It's not bad at all. It sounds cumbersome, right? It really does. But it doesn't take as much time as you think. Once you get into the habit of writing up acceptance criteria and that approval process becomes part of your sprint planning. I mean, the way we do it is we will say to a client, if it's a client that's having a sprint every month as part of a retainer, we give them to a week before the sprint planning meeting to get anything, tickets into their backlog. I will then look over the stuff, and so will the developer, and I will draft acceptance criteria, or the developer will draft acceptance criteria, and we'll put draft estimates on. That means that come the sprint planning meeting, we've already got all that stuff sorted. And it's taken maybe half a day to max, depending on what's in there. We ask any questions. They have 2 days from the sprint planning meeting to finalise everything. After those 2 days, development for that sprint starts. And that smoothed everything out. I have clients now that are so used to the process that when I email to set up the sprint planning meeting, I'll often get an email back confirming, going, by the way, we've gone through the backlog. Can you look at the top 5-6 items and we'll go from there? And so we've got a week to go through the top items that they've already defined and move on from there. It sounds cumbersome to begin with, and yeah, getting clients into that process can be a cumbersome thing to do. It can be awkward, but it is well worth it. It's great. It engages every team member. It engages the client. It forces people to think, and it defines everything rigidly. Nothing is assumed at all. And it's great. I love acceptance criteria, as you may have gathered. Go use it now. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join me in a week's time for the next episode. In the meantime, please do check out letstalkabouttests.wordpress.com, where all the show notes will be posted. You can contact the show at letstalkabouttests@gmail.com and follow the show on Twitter at letstalktests. My Twitter is @gem_hill. You can subscribe to the show, and if you enjoyed it, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Thanks, goodbye.